This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Kayla, and thank you for joining me. We live in a world where we demand scientific evidence, don't we? If there's a popular, we want to know what information it's based on. If there's a new medication, we want to know the science behind it. We rely on science for everything. And yet, our faith is meant to be blind. When we learn that Solomon's temple stood in Jerusalem, the Torah gives us exacting details, but archaeological evidence is still to be unearthed to scientifically support the existence of the temple. The same was true for the Ark of the Covenant, the Exodus, and the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Until now, that is. One of the great mysteries that has really held our attention is the quest for the lost tribes of Israel. Where are they? Will they really return? Is the prophecy true? There's a documentary called The Quest for the 10 Lost Tribes of Israel, produced by Sinclair Yakubovich. Take a listen.
In the Bible, there's a prophecy. And that prophecy says that in the end of time, all these people that were exiled, that we call the lost tribes of Israel, will get up and come back to Israel. And it'll start happening all over in the four corners of the world. And they'll just get up and start moving back. And what if it was actually happening? Here you have this prophecy, and people are actually getting up. They may be in your own neighborhood. And they're packing their bags, and to you, they're just somebody else packing their bags and moving. But in actual fact, they're responding to some kind of biblical post-hypnotic suggestion. I'm not talking about 1,000 years. I'm talking about 2,700-year-old suggestion that they're responding to now. And we could actually film these people and match the prophecy with the events. And the reason it should matter is that because once they do what they have to do, they trigger the apocalypse.
The evidence exists, and one man is connecting the dots for us through his brilliant documentaries. He's a triple Emmy award-winning investigative journalist. He's host of The Naked Archaeologist, and how's this? His documentary on the Falasha of Ethiopia is considered one of the factors prompting the Israeli government to airlift Ethiopian Jews to Israel. His name is Simcha Yakubovich, and he joins us now. Welcome, Simcha, and thank you so much for the time.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy to be on the show.
Well, you've made many movies, and I love all of them. The Quest for the 10 Lost Tribes is the one that I really want to focus on, but I do want to mention to our listeners that The Exodus Decoded will blow your mind in terms of how the dots are connected. The Lost Ark of the Covenant is another one. Can it really be found? So I'm actually going to post the links up on our Facebook page, on the Chaifim Facebook page, and you'll be able to watch them there. Simcha, where did your interest in the 10 tribes begin?
Well, you know, I'm interested in Jewish history. I take a very simple approach sometimes to things, you know. I don't overly complicate them. And when you read in the Bible, and the Tanakh, when you read, where did they go? I mean, we were 12 tribes, right? When we left Egypt, when Moses was leading us, when Joshua led us into the promised land, we were 10 tribes. Then the Assyrians conquered part of ancient Israel, and they took 10 of our tribes into exile, supposedly never to be heard from again. And they became the so-called mythological lost tribes of Israel. So we were left really two and a half tribes, you know, Judah being the main tribe. And you know, that's why we're called Jews. But we were Israelites before. There were 12 tribes. And I just, you know, wonder, like, almost like a child, where are they? You know, like, once upon a time, the planet was a big place. You could say they're beyond some river, and there was a legend that they are beyond the river Sambatyon. It's a river that, you know, on Shabbat, that the only time, you know, it was kicking up rocks 6 days of the year, and it fell down on the seventh, but it was Shabbat, so they couldn't pass. And today the world is a pretty small place. We know every corner of it. We can buy tickets. So, If you look in the Bible, it says where they went. It says that they went to a place by the river Chavor, a place called Gozan. It actually gives you coordinates to put into your ways, you know. So I went to the travel agent and I bought tickets to the Lost Tribes. I said, is there such a place? Is there a river called Gozan next to a place called Chavor? And we know that place. It's called, in popular lore, the Khyber. The biblical Chavor is Peshawar, Peshchavor in Hebrew, in Pakistan. It's on the Pakistani-Afghani border. And we know even the famous Khyber Pass is Chavor. And it's right next to the river Ghazni, the biblical Gozan. So I thought, okay, I'll just buy tickets to the Lost Tribes of Israel. And I took a film crew with me. It was a while ago. And there we were. We landed in Peshawar. And when you land in Peshawar, you know, right now, the Taliban are making international news because the Americans are pulling out. And they're taking over Afghanistan again. Well, you know, people didn't know where Afghanistan was. You know, people like it wasn't top of mind awareness. But if you land in Afghanistan or you land in neighboring Pakistan, then the predominant Taliban is a party. It's not a people. It's a Muslim extreme party. The people are called Pakhtun, who they call themselves Pushtun or Pakhtun, and we call them Pathans, right? The famous battles of the Khyber Pass where they drove away the British. They're amazing fighters. They drove away the British. They drove away the Soviets. They drove away the Americans. They know how to fight. And if you land there and you get a cab, the cab driver picks you up and you ask him, hey, excuse me, you know, what people do you belong to? They say, I don't say, they say, we are Bani Israel, the children of Israel, Bani Israel, Bnei Israel in Hebrew. These are millions of people. And when you tell that to scholars, regular scholars, they'll say, oh, they're, you know, they have these traditions, but they're not proved. They're making this up. Why would they make it? Why would millions, why would 16 million Afghan Muslims make themselves, make up an Israelite Jewish past? Why they sat around one day and they said, wouldn't it be wonderful to be Jewish? Let's make it up. I mean, it's ridiculous. They say we are Bani Israel. And then if you ask them, are you all by the same? They say we are broken. We live in tribes. This is modern Afghanistan. Today, you read about it in the news. You read about today in the news, the possible fall of Kabul to the Taliban. Well, Kabul is the capital of Afghanistan. If you land in Kabul, people are trying to get out of Kabul right now. But if you land in Kabul and you ask them, why is this country called Afghanistan? Just very simple questions. Millions of Afghans will tell you. Because it's named after Afghan, the son of Saul, the first king of Israel. So you say, oh, Afghan, I don't know about him. He said, well, King David, when he became king, he persecuted the children of Saul. And one of Saul's sons fled here. We call him Afghan. They call him Afghan. We know Saul's children by different names, but the point is they say that Afghanistan is the land of Afghan, son of Saul, king of Israel. So, you know, they've got an Israelite name to their country. Well, what about their capital city, Kabul? There are two Kabuls in the Tanakh, one in Joshua conquers and one in the north near Haifa. It's on the map. You can Google map it. It's called Kabul. There were two Kabuls in Israel, and the Kabul in the north near Haifa was smack dab in the middle of the so-called lost tribes of Israel. So it looks like they took the name, the Israelite name Kabul, with them to Afghanistan and they named their capital after, you know, this Israelite city. So you have a people that call themselves children of Israel. You have a country that's named after a king of Israel or a prince of Israel. You have a capital that's in the Tanakh, as in the Hebrew Bible, as a city in northern Israel. I mean, you know, I just basically, you know, like a child, I ask simple questions, I get simple answers, and then I bring them up. Whereas a lot of scholars, they ask very complicated questions, and they present very complex answers that, frankly, don't make sense.
So interesting, because amongst the Pathans, you mentioned in your documentary, there are 11 tribes. And of those 11 tribes, you've identified the tribe of Reuben, Gad, Shimon, and Ephraim. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, you know, Afghanistan had, you know, at the beginning of the American intervention there, a prime minister named Reuveni. And if you ask this guy, why are you named Reuveni or Rabbani? Like, why is this name? And he would say, I am from the tribe of Reuben. I mean, they don't hide it, right? Some Muslim fundamentalists today, it started during Second World War, where Nazi influence, they told them that you are Aryans, not Israelites. And some fanatical groups today will say, yeah, we're Aryans. That Israelite history of ours is wrong. But I interviewed Taliban, members of extreme Muslim sect. They say we are Bani Israel. You know, we're Muslims today, but we are Bani Israel. Interestingly, Islam had a very hard time conquering Afghanistan. They fought against Islam and only adopted Islam when it became clear to them that you worship only one God. You don't have, like Christianity, you don't worship a man like Jesus or something like that. It's just pure monotheism. There's no statues and the mosques and so on. But even though they adopted Islam, their fellow Muslims, when they have a Muslim gathering like happened a few years ago in Iran, don't invite them. They don't consider them real Muslims. Now, why is that? You have extremist group like Taliban. The Taliban are a recent phenomenon. They were set up basically by Pakistani Secret Service in the refugee camps of Pathans in Pakistan. They basically set up this radical Muslim groups to go fight against the Soviets. The CIA also funded this group to fight against the Soviets, and now these groups have backfired. But these are religious political movements. Again, if you just ask any ordinary Afghani, what law do you abide by? What law do you follow? First thing out of their mouth is not going to be Sharia law. It's not going to be Islam. It's going to be the Pukhtuwali, the law of the Pathans. And what law is that, you ask them? Well, they say it's the Bible. You know, they believe that literally they have the written Torah without the oral Torah. So for them, an eye for an eye is not a metaphor. It's literally, you know, you take out somebody's eye, they take out your eye back. Yeah. You know, a tooth for a tooth. It's literal. It's a very literal version of the Torah that they are still loyal to. And if there's a conflict between their literal Torah version of the law and Islam, they choose the Torah. They choose Pukhtuwali. And that's why many Muslim groups don't consider them true Muslims.
Is that where your whole journey started, in Afghanistan?
No, you know, I went all over the world because you mentioned that my first film ever was Falasha, Exile of the Black Jews. And the way the Jews of Ethiopia were recognized religiously as Jews were because of a bunch of historical sources. The chief rabbinate said that they are from the tribe of Dan. And there was an historically Eldad, the Danite, that suddenly showed up and he was black and he told of their kingdom. They lived in Ethiopia. They had their own independent kingdom for a very, very long time. Lasted longer than the ancient kingdom of Judah. There's a glorious Jewish history in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
They had a queen named Judith that committed suicide, taking her enemy down with her when her armies were finally defeated. So she, to this day, they haven't forgotten Judith in Ethiopia, and they curse independent women by calling them Judith Budit. And so the point is that these Ethiopian Jews, and now there's over 100,000 in Israel, they serve in the Israeli army, they're in the Knesset. According to the chief rabbinate, these are from the lost tribe of Dan. So I started wondering, wait a minute, could this be true if the Ethiopians are lost Israelites and they've come back? Could there be other ones out there and they'll come back? Well, there's a group in Israel of a few hundred called the Menashe. They claim to be from the lost tribe of Menashe. And Menashe is one of the sons of, was a tribe, a half-tribe, descendant from the biblical patriarch Yosef. So, and they are in northern India. There they're called the Menmase. I went there. It was amazing. At the time there was civil war and they were trying to set up their own independent kingdom or state in northern Israel with a flag with a Star of David on it. Can you believe it? There was a civil war in northern Israel, in northern India, in modern times, where a tribe claimed to be Israelite was trying to set up an independent Israelite kingdom or republic in India with a Star of David on their flag. So I still have the flag. And I thought, this is amazing. So I went there. You know, I went to, they live in Manipur and Mizoram, two states in India. And there I saw, people studying to be Jews, converting halachically to Judaism, speaking Hebrew. I mean, can you imagine that? And the irony was and is, if you're a Hindu in India and you want to buy a ticket to Israel, no problem. Before COVID-19, we want your tourism dollars. But if you're a member of the tribe of Menashe and you want to buy a ticket to Israel, you can't, because they're afraid you're going to stay there claiming to be a Jew. So it's a very controlled aliyah of the Menmase or Menashe of India. So what I did, I just followed up all these leads, and they finally led to, Menmase is a small group. The Danites are a small group, but the Afghan, according to biblical prophecy, the lost tribes, the descendants of Joseph and Ephraim being the biggest tribe, and the descendants of Judah, meaning the Jews in the messianic times, will be reunited. So I thought, well, if that prophecy is going to come true, you need millions of them. You don't need 100,000. You need millions. And the only place where millions of seemingly non-Jews claim to be Jews is Afghanistan. And that finally led me to the Khyber Pass.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Kathy Kaler. This is Community in Conversation. My guest today is Simcha Yakubovich. Fascinating, because your travels have taken you to Uzbekistan. Will you tell us a little bit more about
that? Traveled a lot of cool places. I have a talus cover that was actually made by a friend of mine's mother for me that comes from South Africa. And inside this beautiful talus cover, I have a talus that I created in pieces. The actual talit comes from the Menashe. The little gold bar on the shoulder, on the neck, is from pre-Holocaust Romania, where my parents were from. They're Holocaust survivors. The blue thread, the tchelet, comes from Israel. So, that talit you can't buy, you gotta earn. So I've been a lot of interesting places. And people say, you know so much about this, you know so much about that. It's true, but that's because I follow Jewish history. The Jews take you everywhere. So it isn't like I'm such a history genius. I just love Jewish history and I follow Jewish history. And when you follow Jewish history, and if you actually get on an airplane and follow it physically when, it's not too dangerous, then, because I don't want, don't try this at home. I don't want everybody running to Kabul right now. When you follow Jewish history, boy, you get to some amazing places. You know, I remember I wrote a blog a couple of years ago about Rafael Nadal, who was, the world champion tennis player. And he comes from the island of Mallorca. And I found Inquisition records where a Rafael Nadal was hauled up in front of the Inquisition, same name as him, as a Judaizer, as a secret Jew that had been forced by the Inquisition to practice Christianity, but they were secretly a Jewish. And on the island of Mallorca, there's a group called Chuetas. They're put down as Chuetas, who are nominally Christian, but they know and everybody else knows that they're Jews. And they only marry, until recently, they only married amongst themselves. And Nadal is one of these people. I wrote an essay, a blog saying, he should come home to Israel and then we'll have a world champion tennis player. And anyway, that made front page news in Spain that Nadal is of Jewish origin. So I'm saying, basically, yeah, I got to some interesting places, but I'm basically just following in the footsteps of Jewish history. And a lot of it is just out there. You just have to be willing to actually follow it up. It's not like I had to dig, find, a secret cave somewhere with this information.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Kathy Kaler. This is Community in Conversation. My guest today is Simcha Yakubovich. And I think that there's something special that distinguishes you from other people, in that other people just say, oh, they're lost. You said, to that five-year-old mind of yours, you have this curiosity. Well, if they're lost, where did they go? Where are they? What I find so interesting is the length to which you are prepared to go to find the truth. And we live in such a world of sheker, of falsehood, where people can take and doctor photos, where you just don't know what to believe anymore. It is so refreshing to have somebody who says, I want to find the truth, and I'm going to go and do that. Going to Uzbekistan, to Buhara, finding the Issaharli, is that what they were called? That was another tribe, the tribe of Issachar.
Tribe of Issachar, yeah. Yeah, we stereotype because we generally talk about Jews being either Ashkenazim or Sephardim. In Israel, we throw also Mizrahi at it. I find it very funny because a lot of people in Israel will call themselves Sephardi. And then you say, well, where are your parents or grandparents from? They'll say places like Afghanistan. So, well, Sephardi means Spanish. And they are the descendants of the Spanish Jews. And the Afghanis were never, the Jews in Afghanistan or Uzbekistan, they were never part of that expulsion from Spain. They never lived in Spain. So you say, well, you're not really from Spain. And they say, I know, but people don't know. So we just call ourselves Sephardi. But they know that their tradition is that they're from other tribes, like you mentioned Uzbekistan, the Jews of Uzbekistan from Bukhara, we call them Bukharan Jews. The name, for example, Issacharovich, and one of the lost tribes is Issachar, is prevalent among them, nowhere else, not among any other Jewish groups. And then you have historical documents, which I show in my film, Quest for the Lost Tribes, which show that into the 1800s, people said that there were lost tribes of Israel in that area. So yeah, I mean, I'm a journalist, investigative journalist, and I say that I use the tools of investigative journalism for historical, odysseys. I use the tools because usually I have people who do investigative journalism that are into, trying to go after politicians and stuff like that. And then you have the guys who do history. They know a lot of history, but they don't have investigative tools. And the investigative guys don't necessarily know a lot of history. So I like to combine the tools of an investigative journalist with historical research. And what you get is some amazing adventures. I've been very, very blessed that, as you say, seeking the truth as opposed to believing all the nonsense that's often in the internet. It has been a great blessing for me because I've gone on amazing adventures. I met amazing truth-seeking people. And really been blessed to go to places and pray, you know, in places and in synagogues that people maybe haven't been in for hundreds of years or thousands of years.
You know, I just can't get over how casual you are when you say you're an investigative journalist. You've won 3 Emmys for your investigative journalism. There's a huge list of awards that you've won, and it just shows you that if you follow your curiosity, whatever the answer may be, you're just following your curiosity to get to the truth. And that is such a gift because you become our storyteller. Simcha, thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm a Jew. We Jews are, as you are storytellers. It comes, we told some of the greatest stories ever. You know, the Bible is still the best-selling book in the world. So yeah, we were storytellers, and I learned it at the kitchen table. My father of blessed memory and my mother, you know, they forced me to tell, they told stories and they forced me to defend my positions and tell stories. And that's where I got my education, and I'm still at it. And Jewish history is not just about Jewish history. It's about sensitivity to history generally. I just finished a series that's airing in Israel as we speak, called Enslaved, and the lost history of the transatlantic slave trade. And in that, we dove more slave ships that sunk, you know, because 12 million Africans were trafficked, and about 2 million died at sea. And we, you know, Samuel Jackson, the famous actor, joined us, and together we made this series, 6-part series, Enslaved. And during that, I used the same technique of historical research, diving and finding sunken slave ships to tell the wider story of what happened. I remember at one meeting, an African-American executive at a television station said to me, yeah, you know, but you're not African or African-American or black. I said, I'm a Jew. I thank God every morning when I get up that thank you for not making me a slave. We gather the family once a year and thank God for taking us out of Egypt. We say it after every meal. We thank God after. As Jews, we've been sensitized to certain issues. Enslavement is one of them. People say to me, tell me about your non-Jewish films. I say, I don't have any non-Jewish films. I'm a Jew. Every film that I make, every story that I tell, my Jewish DNA is part of it. Whether overtly it's a Jewish story like the Lost Tribes of Israel, or it seems not to be like the transatlantic slave trade. So thank you. You know, I've been very fortunate to be given a platform to tell my stories. And I'm still at it.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. And lucky us that you are. Simcha, looking at all the different tribes. Now, I had to change my thinking. It was a paradigm shift for me as well, because when I think of, you know, the lost tribes of Israel, and I look at the Ugandan Jews, and they're davening the same nusach as Jews in Johannesburg and some Jews in Israel and Jews of Eastern European descent. I kind of think of the lost tribes looking like that, but it's not. Jews are Jews, you said earlier, because we are from the tribe of Judah. We are just one of the tribes. The other different tribes all have their own characteristics, their own, yeah, I'd say characteristics. Is there a common thread to all of the tribes? What I'm asking is, where does tradition begin and end, and where does truth begin and end?
Well, you know, it's very interesting that this idea of kind of classifying people, say, by color is very foreign to the Torah. Moses, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is married to a Cushite. It's right in the Torah. The Talmud says, well, what's that all about? I thought, he was married to Zipporah, who was a Midianite. Now, Cush was a real place. It lasted for thousands of years. One interpretation in the Torah, in the Talmud, is that Cushite means beautiful. So, you know, black is beautiful. But Cush was a real place, and there's a tradition that when Moses fled Egypt, he went south, not into the Sinai, and he was a African king. He was a king in Sudan, modern-day Sudan, Cush, and that he was married to a Cushite. There's a whole tradition about it. And if you look in the Torah, color is never what defines. It's people's faith. It's people, it's who they worship, what they stand for that defines the people. And if, again, if you look at the Torah, you see that the four mothers, we have four fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but we have four mothers. And these, we talk about Sarah and Leah and Rachel, but all these four mothers don't necessarily come from the same ethnic stock. They have children with Jacob, who had more than one wife, or the, you know, more than one handmaiden. And these children have, are the forefathers of the tribes of Israel. So by definition, according to the Torah, we don't all come from the same look, right? We have, there's different looks. So, but that then never mattered. And it was that wasn't the issue. The issue is, you know, did you worship stones or did you worship Hashem? So what I'm saying is that, yeah, I think that we've always come, King David, according to tradition, was a redhead. I mean, this idea of making them all, everybody white and blonde, you know, is, I think, historically inaccurate. But also making them everybody black is inaccurate. I think that reflects more about modern politics than ancient history. I think Jews always came in multicolored, multi-hues. But what kept us together is what we stood for, not what we looked like.
Look, just a visit to Israel will prove that.
that's another thing. In modern day United States, for example, when I travel there, they stereotype Jews. They don't realize there's 100,000 Ethiopians or that there's Jews from Iraq and from Yemen and we come from everywhere. And that's one of the beautiful things about Israel is that, I mean, what other country, you know, countries went into Africa to enslave blacks. What other country went to rescue them like Israel did with the Ethiopian Jews and take them out? It took a fight, a political fight, but they brought them to Israel. And now you see them, you know, my heart, you know, Miss Israel was an Ethiopian in the parliament, in the Knesset. We have Ethiopians. They're at every level of society contributing to. And I don't regard their history as any less my history. Jewish history is Jewish history. Somebody said, why are you into Ethiopian history? I said, it's not into Ethiopian history. I'm not just going to be into Romanian Jewish history because my parents are from Romania. It's Jewish history. And as such, the history of the Jews of Ethiopia is as much mine as the Romanian history is. I don't define my past by skin color or racial stereotypes made by anti-Semites.
Or even limiting yourself to your own echo chamber or your own sphere of influence. You go beyond that. And I think that that's what makes you a great storyteller.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I always try to, as I say, to ask very plain questions. You know, these people claim to be Israelites. Why? And then if somebody comes up with a good answer, you know, I'm willing to entertain it. But if somebody can come up with no answer, I say, hey, they're telling the truth. They claim to be Israelites. They must be Israelites. And then I look for the evidence. And I was recently in Ghana, and there are villages there that claim to be Jewish. And, you know, people say, well, they have no proof. It's true. They don't have any proof, but they have their oral traditions. So, you know, should they convert? Maybe. But why are we ignoring them? Why aren't we like dancing and singing and welcoming them to Jerusalem? Why would these people want to suddenly, you know, is this spontaneous Jewish combustion? Suddenly Africans in Ghana in some village where everybody's Christian suddenly want to be Jews. And if they do suddenly want to be Jews, what's wrong with that? Like, why in Uganda you have such people? You know, I found the funniest thing was that when I was looking into the lost tribes, a scholar in Israel said they're making it up, and I said why? And the scholar said, well, they live in a dangerous area of the world, and they want to come somewhere where it's peaceful. And I found that so funny that these people sat down and said, you know, let's go somewhere peaceful. I know Israel, the Middle East. That's where I want to be. Just relax poolside, you know, with a glass of champagne.
Yeah, 100%. Simcha, do you think that any of these lost tribes will ever return to Israel and be recognized as the lost tribes, just as the Ethiopian Jews were?
I think it will take a leader with some vision. You know, our leaders have been recently embroiled in domestic politics and also in regional warfare, but it takes some vision. It will take some vision. It took vision for Herzl to say that the Jews of Poland will go to Israel. And nobody believed it. You know, today, oh yeah, Polish Jews in Israel, of course. But nobody believed it when Herzl said it. Then, you know, nobody believed, you know, the person who started, led the way with the Jews of Ethiopia, besides Ethiopians, like, you know, Zichrono Levracha, my late friend, Baruch Tegeni, and other people, Fetlovich and Adana, when these people said the Jews of Ethiopia will come to Israel, it was regarded as ridiculous. You know, African Jews are going to show up in Israel and be officers in the Israeli army and leaders in the Knesset. That was ridiculous just a few years ago. Well, it's not ridiculous. It's going to happen. If you believe in prophecy, by the way, it's going to happen for sure. And we now have Menashe. We have Ethiopians are Danites, meaning the ingathering is happening in front of our eyes. And why should it just be Polish Jews or Romanian Jews that show up? I think you need some vision, and I think it'll happen. It'll happen. And one day we're going to have, you know, Afghani Jews, maybe in their millions, in Israel. You know, maybe that scares some people. I'd love it. Good food, great fighters. You know, it's, you know, why not? And people say, well, they're not, they haven't been Jews for thousands of years. Well, there's all kinds of programs to convert Jews. Jews are showing up from the Ukraine here. They have one grandfather that's Jewish. They're not halachically Jewish. They're converting. Some are not. Some are Christian. They're blonde and blue eyed and they can come, and Afghani Jews can't come. Right now, they're not beating down our doorstep, but we're also making no effort to connect with them. I hope that one day we will have leaders that have some vision and reach out to them. If we reach out to them, they will come, or some of them will come. By the way, again, we stereotype. There's so-called Palestinian groups that everybody knows are Jewish. You know, around Hebron, there's Palestinian chamulas, you know, extended families that people, the Arabs call El Yehud, the Jews. They call the people El Yehud. The chief rabbinate has lists of these people, Arabs, that you cannot sell your chumetz to during Passover. You can't sell the chametz to. Because, why? Because they're Jews. They were forcibly converted during Saladin time, but they're Jews, and we know it, and they know it. Are we inviting them to the party? Are we saying, hey, if you want to come back to the Torah and to the Jewish people, you are welcome? No, we're not. We're treating them, you know, as enemies. They then want to out-Arab the Arabs and become some of them terrorists and fight us. And we're so limited in our understanding of Israelite and Jewish history that we're not inviting people next door to our Jewish party, so to speak.
So interesting. We are living in the most extraordinary times, with or without the pandemic. We need to be able to zoom out and see the bigger picture. And it all starts with a conversation and brilliant documentaries. A lot of your documentaries, you work with scientists, you work with archaeologists, you work with people who are very much based in the theory of history. Do you think that supernatural events can ever be proven by science?
Well, Rambam, Maimonides did. I have very mixed feelings about miracles. Miracles people think of as suspension of nature. I really don't think of it. I mean, sure, God can do whatever God wants to do. But in a way, if you think about it, suspension of nature means that there's a flaw in the computer program. God made a computer program, and then when he wants to save the Jewish people, he's got to kind of create miracles that suspend nature. That's not what Rambam believed. I think that the whole point of the biblical Exodus, the battle between Pharaoh and Moshe, is over, you know, Pharaoh considers himself a god. He thinks that he rules over nature. So the point is that over and over, Moshe is trying to, you know, God is trying to demonstrate that no, Pharaoh, God rules over nature. So if you look at it, you know, there's miracles that involve the water, miracles that involve the earth, miracles that involve the air, that God rules over these things. So I think if we look for a scientific base for the biblical miracles, we should be able to find them. And I think they're there. You know, the proof is in my film, The Exodus Decoded. I demonstrate that, you know, if you have an earthquake storm in the Delta, if you have an earthquake storm in the Mediterranean, this is a scientific concept. I didn't make it up, an earthquake storm. It triggers all sorts of things. So, for example, around the time of the biblical Exodus, or what we consider the date of the biblical Exodus, around 1500 BC, archaeologists agree, and around that time, volcanologists agree that one of the greatest volcanic eruptions in human history took place. Today it's called Santorini. In those days, this volcano was called Thera. It's just off the coast of Greece. Now, what happened when it erupted? It caused darkness all over the Mediterranean, especially across in Egypt. What else happened? One of the plagues, one of the biblical 10 plagues is barad. It's a kind of hail that is ice on the outside and fire on the inside. Well, volcanologists have a name for that, accretionary lapilli. So we say, oh, it's a miracle, ice on the outside, fire on the inside. It's lava that's been spewed into outer space and comes back down, and inside it's hot, and outside you have ice. And you find it archaeologically. I have some home that was found in Egypt that an archaeologist gave me. I have one of the biblical plagues at home. We put it on our Passover table on Passover time. So these things can be demonstrated. So then the question is, there's two issues when you come, let's say, to the biblical Exodus. Did it happen? And a lot of people say, no, it's a myth, it didn't happen. Well, I think we can prove scientifically that it happened. And then the question is, how it happened? Again, we can prove it scientifically. So then people say to me, well, if you're right, then it's not a miracle. And I say, no, it's totally a miracle. Well, it's the timing. If I go out on the street and a guy takes out a gun and wants to mug me, and that moment a tile comes off a roof and hits him in the head, it's a miracle. That doesn't mean that the tile came from outer space. There was a tile on the roof. It came loose. A gust of wind came. I prayed for divine intervention and the tile hit my assailant on the head. Yeah. I can prove all that scientifically. The fact that it happened just when I needed it to happen is a miracle. So I think it's more about timing. I think actually to see it as a suspension of nature is diminishing God's power. Because it's saying God is not all powerful in nature. God has to do magic tricks for us. Well, he doesn't, you know, he can just manipulate nature.
But simply he does do, you know, when I think of the miracles that happen to us each and every day, but we just don't acknowledge them as miracles because they are so easy and they're so common. You know, you eat an apple, you take the two little pips out of the apple core, you throw it away, and then two apple trees grow. That's a miracle. We just don't acknowledge them as miracles. We just see it as nature. We just put it under nature.
I agree. And the Torah tells us, God tells Moses to take the manna, the man that we ate 40 years in the desert, and put it in a jug and put it in the Holy of Holies, because the day will come that people will say this never happened. But for the people that ate the man, it was an everyday occurrence. It wasn't a miracle anymore. It was just food. So I agree. We're surrounded by miracles. And, you know, we sometimes fail to acknowledge them.
Simcha Yakubovich, thank you very, very much for making time to speak to me today. It is a huge privilege to be able to speak to you. I have loved every moment of this interview. We are coming to the end of the interview. I would really love to invite you back after your travels to come and discuss your other documentaries, especially with the Exodus. For years and centuries, we've been told that the pharaoh of the Exodus was Ramses. And you've got another story with that. I don't want to steal the thunder for that interview. I am going to post links to your documentaries from Timeline on the Chai FM Facebook page. But I just want to thank you very, very much. Before I let you go, what are you working on now?
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure. I'll be happy to come back. Right now, I'm working I'm friends with Jim Cameron, the famous director, producer who made Titanic and Avatar. And I'm doing a four-part series that I suggested to him. He said, great idea, and this happened a few years ago. And now he's working on Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5. And I'm making a four-part series on the science, speaking of science, of Avatar. You know, will we ever be able to go to Alpha Centauri as they do in Avatar? Will we ever find life on other planets? Can life exist on other planets? How do we survive in space for dozens of years if it takes dozens of years to get to anywhere else? So I'm having, again, it's such a blessing to go around the world, meet top scientists, look at telescopes that are about to be launched into outer space. And in 2 days, I'm going to Iceland and I'm going to be flying in a helicopter over a volcano. So it's a great blessing to do what I'm doing. And I say to my, you know, my wife, and somebody's actually paying me to do this. So it's great. Yeah. Maybe we'll land in outer space someday. And, you know, as Mel Brooks has it, and we'll meet Chabad.
Jews in space. Yeah. thank you so much, Simcha.
Shabbat
shalom.
Yeah, Shabbat shalom. Take care. Shabbat shalom.
I'm Kathy Kayla. I was speaking to filmmaker, producer, extraordinary storyteller, Simcha Yakubovich. Just a reminder that I will post the links to Simcha's movies on the Chai FM Facebook page. Check them out. They really are worth watching. Has it whet your appetite to find out more about the lost tribes of Israel? Has it expanded your mind that not all of us look the same? Just some food for thought. But that is another conversation. I wish you and yours a Shabbat Shalom. I'll be back next Friday. God bless. Bye-bye.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.